Hi, everybody. It's Carol Tice, the Den Mother here, and I'd like to welcome you to our new Den, our Den meeting of the week. And I know we have a lot of new members, so if this is your first meeting, I'm excited to welcome you to your first weekly live event in the Den, and you're in luck because it's just going to be a great one. We have a terrific guest today, someone whose blog I've been following for a long time. And I think Jeff and I met when the contest for Top 10 Blogs for Writers was underway last fall. And I just took a look at his blog. I was like, why are all these people nominating this person, his blog I've never heard of? And I went over and read it, and I just went, oh, Jeff's going to win. And he did. He took the number one slot in Top 10 Blogs for Writers for this year. So, and I've kind of been following along ever since. Before we dive into talking to Jeff about his blog and about his new book, Wrecked, When a Broken World Slams Into Your Comfortable Life, I just want to say that we have two different modes of communication enabled due to my own incompetence, but I'm going to mostly be looking in the live chat. So hopefully you can see a tab on the left that says chat on the website, and you can click on that and put in your name and get in. And if it doesn't work, just refresh or come back in the site to get on there. I see there's a few questions already in the Q&A mode, and I'll get to those too. But if people want to use Open Chat, then you may. Thanks for coming on, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Carol. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, and I'm glad we found the phone number. Jeff has It's the week that Jeff's book comes out, and so much is going on that he couldn't even find my email that had the phone number to call for this event. It's
maybe I'm just unorganized.
So to begin at the beginning, tell people a little bit about your writing background and about when and why you started your blog.
Yeah, sure. And if at any point you can't hear me for any reason, just let me know. I've been writing my whole life, which, you know, isn't a super long time. I'm 29 years old. But most of that time I've been, you know, writing. And I never considered myself a writer. I considered myself somebody who wrote. And so about a year and a half ago, I had a friend challenge me, and he said, you know, Jeff, what's your dream? And I said, well, I guess, you know, if I could have my druthers, if I could have anything I wanted, it would be to be a writer. And he just kind of looked at me funny and said, well, Jeff, you don't have to want to be a writer. You are a writer. You just need to write. So, I was watching people online create these really big blogs with these huge audiences, and I was resenting them. And so I started my blog with not the best motivations, where it was sort of like an I'll show them. I mean, I saw all these people starting big blogs, and I just found that they weren't great writers. And I thought, I think I'm a good writer, but what am I missing? You know, if it's not about good writing, what is it about? And so, long story short is I found out I wasn't as good of a writer as I thought I was. And I know that you can appreciate this, Carol, but I really began to start studying copywriting and how that interact, you know, how that integrates well with blogging, and then really how it applies to the craft, longer form writing in general. And so learned a lot through that, you know, reading blogs like yours and Copy Blogger and a number of other, you know, great online resources, about not just how to write, but how to get your content read. And so I just, you know, I had been blogging actually on a bunch of different places. I started on Zanga, had a Blogger blog, Squarespace, Posterous.
I had no idea.
you name the platform, I tried it out.
And was it the same theme of the blog that you have now? Or if not, how did you sort of evolve the concept of what you wanted your blog to be about?
Well, I didn't even have that idea that a blog was supposed to be about something. I just thought I would write and people would care what I had to say. So they were all sort of like personal blogs and I think this is typical. You know, somebody starts a blog, they get an idea of what they want to write about, they get really excited, and they blog for like 2.5 weeks, and then they leave the blog, you know, they don't touch it for you know, 3 months and they blog again and forget about it, just get sidetracked. I think most people who start blogs and abandon them, this is sort of the story. And so I just did this over and over and over again. And so finally I got serious, you know, created a self-hosted WordPress blog, stumbled through all of the technology of that. I mean, I'm not tech savvy, and so I just, you know, did my best to figure that out, did most of it myself with some help from my geeky friends. And then I said, you know what, I'm going to commit to this. I'm going to show up every day, and I'm going to write even when nobody else shows up, and I'm just going to do the work. And part of that was, you know, not just writing a blog, but guest posting, building relationships, learning how to promote my writing through, you know, the social web. And I just, yeah, I've been doing it for 5 years, but I hadn't been doing it well. And so I just said, okay, there's something about this that I don't completely understand. And so I'm just going to study what other people are doing. And so I just became a reader and student of other blogs. I started focusing on copywriting. And then I just started building a community on my blog. And I didn't set out to create a blog about writing. I still don't think I don't write about writing all the time. I write about what I'm passionate about, and one of those things happens to be writing, and that just, you know, has become one of the main themes of my blog, because, you know, when I write about writing, there's, you know, that's what really resonates with people. So that's kind of how I got started, and it took off a bit more quickly than I thought it would.
Yeah, so when did sort of the current iteration, so Jeff's blog, if you're not familiar, is Gowen's Writer on Writing, Ideas, and Making a Difference. And so when did it sort of become what it is today? You know, when did you launch the blog we're looking at now?
February 2011.
Wow. Not long back. Yeah, well, one of the things that it really impresses me about your blog is the huge amount of engagement that you get. That, and you read a really strong headline, which you know I'm obsessed with, online headlines. Two things that you said I just really want to spotlight. The first is studying copywriting, because, you know, we were talking about this actually on our boot camp training on Tuesday, that blogging bears more resemblance to copywriting than it does to writing a magazine article.
Yeah.
That it, this grammar rules can be broken, it's more conversational, it has to be compelling, I need to know what benefit I'm going to get out of reading it by looking at the headline, that there it has a lot of similarities to copywriting versus writing a newspaper article where the headline might not even tell me anything and a subhead might tell me stuff, and where copywriting has that same sort of punchy, short, got to get to the point kind of drive to it. And the other thing is, you know, that shift from sort of writing about whatever to kind of focusing on to a few topics and focusing on helping readers versus sort of it's all about me and, you know, my beautiful words, and focusing on learning from the other bloggers, because that is exactly what my reaction was. I was like, well, I've been writing for a long time. By the time I discovered blogs in, I don't know, 2008 or something, I had been earning my full-time living from writing for a really long time, but I didn't know anything about blogging, and I spent a lot of time studying what other bloggers were doing who were successful. And I think that sort of willingness to be a learning sponge, I mean, even today I have like a cache of probably 200 different emails from blogs I subscribe to that I'd like to sit down and read and learn from.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to. And the thing is, you know, blogging keeps evolving, and what works in it keeps changing, so you have to have that interest in sort of staying on top of what's successful in blogging. Mm-hmm. And so when was the, you know, when was the point with this blog where you felt like, hey, this is catching on better than my other attempts at this, and, you know, was there sort of a turning point where, and if so, what caused that turning point?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, there were milestones, and, you know, but I should say that what I did was, you know, I took this, basically, I'll give you a little bit of backstory, sorry, I'm a little tongue-tied, to give you some backstory, this URL, this domain, goinswriter.com, was a static website that I created on WordPress.com. Just this place that I put together years ago when I started writing for magazine articles. When I started doing some freelancing, I wanted to have a place where I could point people to like my writing portfolio. It was like a static professional website, and I thought this would be a great way to get side freelance projects, which it was not effective at doing at all. as I'm sure kind of help people understand, like, if you're a writer, you can't just put up a static website and just start generating writing gigs. It's not how it works. But that's what I did, and so then that just sat there for like 2 years, and then I took this blog and I moved it from WordPress.com to WordPress.org and turned it into this the writing blog that it is today. And ever since I made that shift, which was about 18 months ago, I was committed. So it wasn't like I was trying this out and if it took off, I would keep doing it. Like, I knew that I had to put the work in, and I was prepared to put in about 2 years of work before I was expecting to get anything out of it. Now, obviously, I wanted some traffic, some comments, that sort of thing, but I was hoping to build a platform that would eventually allow me to get published, to write a book, which had always been a dream of mine, and I just was scared to try it out. And so when I began, I was committed. I was ready to put the work in. So I wasn't like, I'm going to try this for a month and see what happens. I remember reading Darren Rouse's story of blogging, and for him it was like, if I don't make this much money by, the first month, I'm quitting. And, that was just kind of how his, journey and professional blogging started. Mine wasn't like that. I was like, I'm going to do the work, and I'm going to trust that eventually it'll pay off.
I had a similar journey with mine where I had been kind of dabbling with it, and then I went, I need to post at least once a week, every week on Monday. I need to get serious about this. I think there is a turning point where you have to feel like, I'm really going to commit to this. I know I'm not making any money out of it, and often I find that drive comes from just a compulsion to do it. You just feel like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
That's right.
I should be doing this, and so I should get off my butt and do it, and stop talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, Stephen Pressfield calls this turning pro, and it's basically this, nothing really changes except your mindset. And, we're all probably, a lot of people are watching the Olympics right now and they're tuned into that sort of thing. No Olympian says, Michael Phelps doesn't say, I'm going to swim a few laps, and if I get some awards for it, I'll keep doing it. He's like, no, I'm going to train, and I'm going to, bust my butt doing the work so that when it comes time to compete, I'm ready. And so when I started my blog, that's what it was. It wasn't a business. It wasn't anything but an opportunity to practice and to do it in public in a way that might earn some attention. So a few milestones were the first day I launched, relaunched the blog, had a friend design a header for me and, moved over to the self-hosted WordPress site. I emailed a bunch of people that I knew that I'd met in the past year. So before I launched my blog, I spent about 6 months going to conferences, meeting people, taking people out to coffee, lunch, that sort of thing. Mostly people online, bloggers, influential people that I wanted to be in relationship with. I wasn't being super intentional. I just knew that meeting people and networking was valuable. And so when I launched this blog, I emailed all those people one by one, and I said, just wanted to let you know that I've launched a blog today. Check it out here. If you think it's, if you like what you see, feel free to, tell people about it. And so that first day, I had over 600 unique visitors to my blog, which was more than I had ever had, in all of my years of dabbling with blogging. And so it wasn't a huge number, but to me it was a significant number. And so that was one milestone. I thought, well, maybe there's something to this. This is more than I've ever had on a single day of blogging for years and all of these different, communities. Maybe this is just something different. And so then, the next day it went down to like 50 people and kind of like plateaued, and it took time to, build back up to that. The next milestone happened when I released an ebook, which I always thought was stupid. Like, why would I give away an ebook asking people to, subscribe with their email? That just seems dumb. Like, people are smarter than that. And but I was like, well,
people love free stuff, don't they?
You're right. Yeah, it's not about intelligence, but I didn't get it. I didn't know. So literally what I'm doing is I'm watching somebody do something And I'm going, well, I guess I'll try that. And if it works, I'll do it some more. So when I released my ebook, I had 75 newsletter subscribers. This was several months into my blog. And I had started to build some relationships. One of the people that I connected with was a blogger named Michael Hyatt, who's pretty well known in the publishing world and has a pretty, well-read blog. And I wrote this ebook, very short, 900 words, that's like an essay, it's not even an ebook. And I emailed it to him and I asked if he would be interested in endorsing it. He was, and so then when the ebook came out, he tweeted about it to his, 100,000 followers, and, I had a bunch of blogger friends that I knew just review it and talk about it. And so in that week, my newsletter list went from about 75 people to over 1,000 people.
Wow.
And that was a big milestone for me. And I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe this whole, free ebook thing is, not too bad of a strategy.
Yeah,
so
in A-List Blogger Club, Mary Yox does a presentation on what happened to her subscribers before and after she added the free ebook. And it's the same thing. It's just like nothing happening, straight up into the sky when we get the free thing. It's amazing how giving something to people right off makes them feel that you're a giving, trustworthy person they want to hang out with. It's just really powerful to say, I got free stuff for you here, that's well organized and you can just grab it. So how did you connect with Seth Godin? I see he's the plugger of your current free product, the Writer's Manifesto.
Mm-hmm. It's the same ebook. I've never changed it.
I just changed mine. I don't know if you saw it, but I've thrown a change up, and now you get a free 20-week e-course that comes on email. Yeah. And that's changing the game as well, the higher level of quality in the free product.
Oh. So the long, boring story is, Seth and I emailed for years. If you email Seth Godin, he will reply probably today. That's
really?
Wow. Yeah, that's just how accessible he is.
Interesting.
And most people I tell them that, and they're sort of shocked unless they've tried it. And then they're like, yep, you're right. I just tried it on a whim, and he responded. So years ago, I emailed Seth, having read one of his free ebooks, probably the Bootstrapper's Bible, which is a great ebook on entrepreneurship. If you've not read it, feel free online. And I emailed him, and I said, thanks for this. And he replied. And so I was like, well, that's cool. And so probably 5 or 6 years, just randomly, I would just email him and thank him, say hi, whatever. I'm sure I came across as an amateur and a dork, and he was just really, nice. And he was very short. Yep, thanks, Jeff. Keep up the good work. But it was just like such a big deal to me. And so, the answer that I tell people when they ask, like, how did you get Seth Godin to endorse your ebook, or how did you interview Stephen Pressfield or connect with Chris Brogan or, any of these people, I say, well, I asked them. And people are like, no, what's the secret? Well, I asked them. And that really is, that is a big part of the secret.
And not every top blogger will respond to you, but some of them will. And other thing is, if you write killer headlines, some of them just find you. That was actually my experience. John Morrow found me from one of my blog headlines and said, I think you should post for Copy Blogger. And, Mary Yox checked out my blog and said, I think you should apply for Top 10 Blogs for Writers. Like, it never would have crossed my mind to enter otherwise.
Cool.
Never. I felt like, I'm just getting started here, getting organized, figuring this out, But what I didn't know is that, as you found out, they really like to spotlight fresh voices in that contest and bring new people to light. But I was wondering if you could give a little advice on how you get so many comments. Talk about, because I've really never seen, I don't know what other blog I can think of that's like a niche blog that's not one of the 100 most trafficked sites. This is a modest sized niche blog where there's just routinely 100 comments on posts.
I don't know. You know, I have a friend who his name's Joe Bunting. He has a great blog called The Right Practice, W-R-I-T-E,
mm-hmm.
practice.com. And he also was a winner of one of the top 10 blogs. The reason I mentioned Joe is he's got about 3,500 subscribers on his blog, maybe more now. And I am really envious of his engagement on his blog. He will often get more comments than I will, you know. And here's the interesting thing. So I asked him about it. I said, how do you get so many comments? And he said, I don't know. He goes, because most of the people in the comments aren't me. And that's what's interesting. You know, so the short answer is it's easy to get 50 comments on a blog post because all you really need is 25, and then you reply to all 25, and now you have 50 all of a sudden. But my friend Joe has done something different where he has empowered his community to, you know, kind of run the show. And so his blog is all about, you know, here for 15 minutes a day, practice on this one thing, you know, this one writing concept. And then once you write about it, encourage somebody else and share it all in the comments. So I saw Joe do that, and I tried that out on my blog a month ago. We did this exercise called the 15 Habits of Great Writers, Mastering the 15 Habits of Great Writers. And what I did was I picked apart an ebook that I'd written called You Are a Writer, and for 15 days we chose one habit of a great writer, and I would write a 300-word article, very short, and then at the end I would challenge people to do something. And, you know, so we promoted it ahead of time, link up here, you know, here's the hashtag, all of that stuff. And so the first day I posted for this series, 500 people, over 500 people commented on the post. And I mean, that's like 10 times, you know, the normal amount of people that are commenting on my blog post. And what it was we were doing an event, like we were doing something together. And so I wrote sort of the prompt, and then people were engaging in the exercise or whatever, and then they were encouraging each other. So, you know, the answer, I guess, is find a way to make the community, to make the tribe not about you. Find a way to make it about them. And if people have some sense of shared ownership of your content, you know, whether it's you helping them do something and then them talking about it, or, you know, asking a question and them responding. It's not enough to just ask a question and have people respond. Like, they have to feel some sense of possession over the content so that when they're adding a comment, they feel like they're contributing to the overall piece.
I think there's another component to what's going on in your blog, and that's that you're really writing about emotions.
Yeah.
And our feelings about our lives and our purpose and, like, big stuff, big important things. And obviously we all have emotions, and we all wonder why we're here and, you know, want to feel like we're doing things that matter. And I just want to read some headlines to give people an idea of the engagement that goes on here. He has headlines like, everyone has a story to tell, which obviously is going to invite me to tell you a little bit about mine. When it feels like everything is falling apart, like, who can't relate to? There's a lot of relatability, and a lot of these are about emotions. Warning, writing like this will make your readers cry. I feel like there's an emotional engagement level. How to get your spouse to support your dream, really, like, practical, useful things people want to know. You know, a challenge to share a story you don't want to tell. Just... these headlines are an invitation to join in. And and that was the turning point for me as well when I started saying to people, what's your best piece of advice about this? Or what is the biggest challenge going on in your life? Yeah, all of a sudden you find out the readers come out of the woodwork and start talking to you. And it starts, you start being more of a convener of a like-minded group of people who all want to share about something because it, you know, uplifts them, helps them, then it's about me, and my beautiful words, you know. I don't know a lot of blogs that are like that, and that second one that go anywhere. So if you check out Jeff's blog lately, or you don't live on the moon and are anywhere in social media, you might be aware that Jeff has managed to write a book. And you're like me, I thought eventually 500 people would join the den, but they're doing that like this week, 1 year later. And I think you have the same sort of accelerated success schedule compared with what you thought would happen. So talk about how your book, Wrecked, came to be.
Yeah. I started writing a book. I started writing on the blog, and, like, that was enough for me. I wanted to build something that would, leave a legacy. I wanted to build something long-lasting. I felt like I was creating a resource, and so for me it wasn't about writing just for today. It was about writing for tomorrow and next year. I knew that as I created content, it would sort of accrue value over time. And so as I was writing, I was just trying to write the best content possible, and I wasn't really thinking about anything beyond that. But a few months in, I had somebody contact me asking me if I would be interested in doing this thing called hybrid publishing, where, like, it's sort of like traditional publishing where you get a lot of access to, bookstores and whatnot. But it's kind of like self-publishing where you put up the money and you split the royalties. And the more I looked into it, the more, not ideal, it seemed for me. And so I just sort of said, I don't want to pay $1,000 to have you publish my book. If I'm going to pay $1,000, I'm going to publish my book, and I'm going to keep 100% of the money, not half of the money. A few months after that, about 8 months into the blog, I had this acquisitions editor from a publishing company contact me, and I had my guard up because I thought it was another one of those, pseudo hybrid publishing scams.
Yeah, semi-vanity press kind of situation.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if that's your deal and you've done that and it's been successful, great. Like, I don't want to knock that. It just didn't. It wasn't what I wanted to do. I either wanted to self-publish or I wanted to, go with a trade publisher and get all of the advantages for either of those avenues. And I think there's pros and cons to both. So I was, like, really skeptical, and we talked on the phone and emailed, and I was just like, I don't know. I just don't know. And so then I went to Chicago, and I met the acquisitions editor that I'd been talking to at a conference, and he was just a real nice guy. And I just felt like, yeah, I mean, this is cool. And so he asked me if I had considered writing a book, and I said, yeah, of course, I'd love to, but I don't know what I would write it about. I hadn't really thought about that because I was planning on doing this a couple years down the line. And he had found this ebook that I wrote years ago before I had a blog for a website called changethis.com. And if you're not familiar with that website, it's kind of a cool thing that Seth Godin actually had a hand in starting and then handed it off to somebody else. It's a place where you can submit an idea for a manifesto, for a short ebook about an idea worth spreading that changes something. And then the whole community votes on it, and the most popular ones get published into, pretty nicely designed ebooks that are free, that are like a free download. So Chris Brogan, Guy Kawasaki, Seth, a number of people have published on those websites. And so I submitted an ebook idea, and it won. And the behind the scenes story is kind of an interesting one because I emailed everybody I could saying, go vote for this. And that thing published, like, I don't know, 3 years ago now. And so last year, the publisher somehow found this, on the internet somewhere, and asked me if I thought about turning that into like a long form book. And I was, one, impressed that he found this old piece of writing that I had done, and two, just I thought that was a great idea. And so shortly after that, they sent me a contract. I said, well, I better get an agent. I didn't have an agent. I was talking to a publisher, and I didn't have an agent. Typically, you have to get an agent and then get a publisher and all of that. Publisher came to me. I had a friend who was an agent. I asked him to represent me. We got a contract, and I started writing the book, and 4 months later turned in the manuscript.
I'm fascinated to hear that because that's the story of how my nonfiction print book came out as well. They approached me. All I can say is, write your best stuff out on the internet because it floats around out there and you never know who's reading it. Mm-hmm. You know, in my case, yeah. This crazy British guy called me on the phone and was like, "Oh, I'm the biggest fan of your entrepreneur blog, and you should write this book for us." And I was just like, "Uh-huh," you know. And then he disappeared for like a year, and then he popped back up and was like, "We're ready to write the book now." And that ended up being how they started the business book that I did about business startups. And I just think that's increasingly happening, that the whole world of, oh, you need an agent and you write a book proposal and stuff, that instead acquisitions editors are doing research online and looking at who they'd like to work with and approaching people.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, it really is changing. And that's interesting that you had that experience. Here's what I've learned, and it seems to be the same, sort of lesson from, your experience of getting connected with a publisher. The people that are a big deal, and I don't mean to, all of your readers are a big deal and they're important, but, like, the gatekeepers, the people that you're, the doors that you're trying to knock on, they are not commenting on your blog. They are just sort of silently lurking, watching. So it's interesting for you to say that, this British guy showed up for, 1 year, disappeared, and showed up a year later, because, like, my acquisitions editor doesn't comment on my blog. And I'm sort of the mindset, if you're not commenting on my blog, you're not really reading it, which isn't true.
Yeah, it's not true. There's lots of lurkers who are
right.
Big devotees. Yeah.
Yeah, and some of those lurkers, have the keys to the kingdom, have the permission that you need to get in front of a lot of people. And so just because you don't have a huge blog doesn't mean that important people aren't looking at your content, paying attention to what you're doing, and waiting for the right moment to, partner with you.
Right. So a couple housekeeping quick things. I noticed that no one seems able to get in the chat, so I think I didn't get that up in time for it to work on the event. So just use Q&A. Some people already are, and that's Ruby, and I'll just read questions out to Jeff later on. No big problem. And I have to know where I have to know where the fabulous cover graphic of the turtle flipped onto its back came from.
Well, I have to correct you. It is a tortoise.
Pardon me.
Because somebody corrected me. And turtles are, basically sea creatures, and tortoises are primarily land creatures. What was here's an interesting thing that I'll kind of pull the curtain back. My publisher is Moody Publishers, and they had their marketing team come up with a couple of concepts. Once we chose the title and the subtitle, we came up with a bunch of concepts, I guess back in December, January, of the potential cover. And so there were five concepts, I think, and they were all very literal, like here's a wrecking ball slamming into a building. Here's a bunch of broken glass, all of these like literal depictions of wreckage. And then there was this tortoise turned upside down on his back. And I just thought, man, like the book is about what happens when your world gets turned upside down. And, so I tell a bunch of stories about people that I know whose lives had something dramatic happen in them. And it was, painful or hard or whatever, but ultimately turned out for good. It changed their life in a good way. And so I thought, man, that feeling of having your world turned upside down, it feels like the turtle feeling right now. You feel helpless. You feel broken. You feel alone. And you feel like it's always going to be this way. And it's not. But in that moment, it feels that way. And so here's the interesting thing that I haven't really told anybody about publicly. I did like a blog post where I had those five concepts, because they're all pretty good. They're all well-designed and, visually appealing. So I put each of those covers on my blog and asked people to vote on them. And I really liked the tortoise, but I wanted to get some community feedback. And so the tortoise did not win. It was second place. And I had this moment where I had to go, do I give people what they want or what I think they need, And it was hard. But I think that's part of being a leader, that's part of being a writer, it's part of being a creative, person is you know, Steve Jobs is really famous for you know, doing this thing. We don't give people what they want. We tell people what they want. You know, it's sort of this,
right.
We know better than you, and I don't ever want to, you know, come across as arrogant. But I just thought, I can't do that. I gotta go with my gut here. I gotta go with my creative gut here. And so what's interesting is in the moment people said, "Oh, this wrecking ball slamming into a building. Like I'm gonna click that one. That one's a good one." And now that we've chosen the tortoise, nobody comes to me and goes, "What's the tortoise all about?" Everybody says, "Man, that turtle,
love it,
genius,
yeah,
genius." Right?
Yeah,
you know?
It really, it just so beautifully sums it up. So let's talk about the whole Christian angle, because, you know, what I wanted to say is, in a way, I think of you as sort of like the Bono of blogging. You know, you work for a Christian organization. If people don't know, Jeff has a day job in communications for a mission organization that sends people abroad. And this is all his side job, if you can believe it. And you know, obviously write from a very Christian perspective, but not in a way that excludes people who aren't religious Christians. You have that great way of talking about spirituality in a way that isn't going to offend people who don't share your particular exact same spiritual worldview.
Yeah.
So, like, congrats on that, because I think that's a tough line.
Thanks.
To walk, and this is, you know, a Christian publisher that it has come out with, and I have many writers who aspire to working in this niche, and I'm hoping you could talk a little bit about that. I mean, this book has a, you know, very strong Christian themes and talks about people who go on mission trips, and yet, you know, I read it as a Jew and didn't feel like it wasn't for me, really, you know, like I should leave in the book because it's not for me. And I just wonder, you know, how you weighed that, sort of how religious to be with it or not.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate, you know, you sharing that, Carol, because this is something that I think about a lot. And I've, I mean, it's sort of a hard line, you know, for me to walk, I think, because there are obviously, you know, strong convictions that I have. And yet at the same time, like, I want my writing to be how I live my life, and I try to live my life in such a way that, like, you know, if you came and knocked at my door and like, the first question I would ask you is not, like, do you believe what I believe? No, well, then you can't come into my house and we can't, you know, hang out and, you know, have dinner together or something.
Mm-hmm.
The way I live my life is, hey, like, we're neighbors. I'd love for you to come over. I'd love to get to know you, and over time, you know, I hope that we can, you know, better understand each other, how one another, you know, views the world and learn from it and grow from, you know, one another's perspective. So, and, you know, not to mention, all of my favorite writing heroes are not people who are in kind of the Christian subculture niche, which I think is fine, and that's for some people and what they feel called to do. But it's people like C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton and Tolkien and these people who were, you know, Christians, were men of faith, but they also just contributed these beautiful stories to the world. And yes, their faith influenced it, but it wasn't in a preachy way. It was in this almost subversive way, like, I'm going to show you what I believe instead of tell you. And so I've tried to be intentional about that. I hope I'm not failing at it horribly, but I'm learning a lot as I go. So, yeah, I mean, bottom might be.
Well, I got to read it on my vacation, and I think it's actually really great vacation reading if you're like me and that you use vacations as a time for a lot of personal reflection of where's my life going, what am I doing with myself, you know, what should I do better when I go back from this vacation. It's really a great, to me, in a weird way, it's a great beach read, you know. It's probably not what most people would think of along those lines, like some trashy novel to sit on the beach with. But if you're the kind of person who looks at your vacations as an opportunity for personal growth and change, it's kind of great for that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and the other thing is, obviously, this gives you a community to market it to that it's sort of pre-sold into.
Mm-hmm.
Of people who are always looking to read uplifting, you know, religious-themed things. And to what extent has that helped you in marketing the book?
Well, I think it's been a double-edged sword, you know, and I think I'm going to continue to sort of live in this tension because my blog is primarily about writing and helping other writers. And so, you know, so part of my readers were going, okay, like, this is going to be a book about writing, you know? And I try to be very explicit. I don't think the title suggests that, but it's not about writing. And I don't want to write about writing all the time. In fact, I think writing a book that's not about writing in some ways sort of legitimizes my online platform, you know, in a way that's not so circular, where I'm writing about writing about writing about writing. So there are those people who were sort of disappointed that I didn't write about writing, which I was fine with because I want to also write about things that matter to me, and this topic is one of the things that, you know, matters to me and hopefully will stay around a lot longer than my blog or the internet will.
Right.
And so, but the other side was, yeah, you're right, there was kind of an existing market for this type of book. And so some people who were readers of my blog could kind of, they could read between the lines and read some of the things on my blog and go, okay, I get a sense of what he believes and what he's about. And so they were anticipating a book that wasn't just about the craft of writing. They were anticipating something about me and how I see the world and that sort of thing. And, you know, going back to answer, you know, your earlier question, you know, I had this moment where I was like, do I write about this in a way that is, this subject in a way that's sort of accessible for everybody? Or do I write about it in a way that feels true to my voice? And so there were times where I sort of had to make that decision where I wanted it to be broadly accessible to as large of an audience as possible, while at the same time realizing you can't write for everybody. And at times, like, how would I talk about this if we were just hanging out? Would I use this, these words, or would I just say, you know, like, I think God told me to do that and mm-hmm. be okay with, you know, some people thinking that's a little weird because that's just how I would say that.
Right. Well, we have got to get to some questions because they're piling up here. And starting with, have you written freelance for the Christian markets? Because I hear these terrible reports that they pay really bad and stuff, and it's really hard to make any kind of living. So share any tips you have on finding decent-paying Christian freelance markets.
Yeah, well, they do pay bad.
As a Jew, I want to say, what is up with that? Because our markets pay really good, and our audience is so much tinier, and I can't figure that out. I just want to say, like, shame on you, Christian publishers, you know, because what is up with that? They should compensate people decently. But anyway, but the reality is they don't.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not real wired into, like freelance writing in general. So I don't know what's good, what's bad. When I first started writing, I was making, you know, $50 or $75 a piece, and that felt kind of meager. When I first started, I was like, oh, great, like, this is money for, you know, a 1,000-word piece. But, you know, that's not great. The most that I've ever made, and I would never try to make a living this way, but the most that I've ever made is probably, you know, $700 off of, like, a 2,500-word piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty decent. That's better than most.
That's pretty probably top of the line for a niche publication, yeah.
I mean, like, if you write for, you know, The New Yorker or something, obviously, it's going to be a lot better than that. It's going to be a lot more competitive as well. So, you know, how do you find those places? I spent a long time trying to get freelance gigs, and it was very hard to get paid. And I got paid for a feature piece for a pretty big Christian magazine. I got paid $250 for a 2,500-word piece, which was a big deal to me. It was a cover piece. And, I mean, that was the most that I got paid for it, for the cover story. And then I didn't hear from them for 2 years, and I submitted and pitched, and they just wouldn't notice me. And so then I just said, I'm done with this. And I went and I worked on my blog, and I built a platform. And all of a sudden, all of these magazines, Christian magazines, were coming to me asking me to write pieces for them on a regular basis to the point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. So, I mean, what's the answer? Yeah, you know, do all of the stuff that you talk about, Carol, and, you know, learn how to, you know, write a pitch and that sort of thing. But if you really want to get paid well, build a platform. People will come to you and ask you to write for them.
Yeah, raise your own visibility. That's so true.
Yep.
So one quick question about, is WordPress a good blog site to utilize to build a strong blog? Yeah, I think we like it. It seems to be
Absolutely.
The predominant one and the easiest to operate yourself. And so many delightful free plugins have been made for it. And until the next better thing comes along, I think we're all liking it.
Oh, so, yeah, totally. And it's quick. I mean, Pat Flynn, I saw a post on his site on smartpassiveincome.com.
Uh-huh.
You can get a blog up in 5 minutes on WordPress. That you own it. It's self-hosted, which means that, you know, you're paying, you know, $5 a month to house it somewhere that isn't on WordPress.com. It's a little bit technical to set up, but if you go through, you know, something like Bluehost.com, or, you know, I'm sure you have some preferred services that you use, Carol.
Yeah.
You can get it set up very, very quickly.
Yeah, and you know, get a host, get a paid host if you want to seem like a pro, and get off Blogspot.com and all that stuff.
That's right.
So Janita says, what are some examples of successful blogs that aren't about writing or geared towards writers? Interested in what other topics writers have found followings have been able to engage people? Like, about everyone there is? I know people with successful blogs about simple living, and I don't know if you've ever seen Tammy Strebel's Rowdy Kittens, where she blogs about how they live in a, like, 100-square-foot house. I gather tattoos is, like, a really successful niche to be in. Mm. You know, Darren Rouse's original and still most successful blog is Digital Photography School, where he teaches people to be better photographers. You name it. And, of course,
yeah.
If your blog is about internet marketing, it's like ding, ding, ding. You hit the jackpot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a couple of others. Leadership, relationships. Life and culture. You can write about popular culture all day long. I mean, what's his face? Perez Hilton. I mean, he has one of the most popular blogs in the world. And all he does is write about celebrities, gossip, you know? I mean, so there's all kinds. And, you know, somebody that you probably know, Carol, Derek Halpern, that's kind of how he got started. He started blogs. He's managed blogs on fashion, celebrities, makeup,
yeah.
All kinds of things.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Where he cut his teeth and learned how to get traffic was on blogging about celebrities, yeah, and learning how to make that work. Donna asked if you make your whole living from writing. I usually consider these questions kind of rude, but I'm assuming between your day job in writing and your blog about writing and all, that you pretty much do this all the time.
Well, yeah, so I mean, yeah, I have a full-time job. I make you know my salary there, and the blog, you know, the blogging thing was intended to support my family so that my wife didn't want to have to continue working and she could stay home and raise our son. That she could do that, and that's her choice. And so we haven't made that decision yet. But what I've been doing this past year is trying to, you know, create some revenue streams for that. So I'll say that we're at the point where things are looking really good. And, you know, if my wife wants to continue to work, she can. And if she doesn't, you know, it's not a big deal. And so I'm learning a bunch of stuff. I mean, this is my first year. I spent a year not trying to make any money off of my blog. And so this year, you know, starting to create some ebooks and products and just kind of figure out kind of the monetization side of things. And it's you know, being very rewarding.
And it's an adventure, isn't it? Figuring out what your people need to buy, because
right.
I figured out that's the formula, is you figure out what do your people need and are they likely to buy anyway in the next year because they need it. And then
mm-hmm.
if you sell that, they write you thank you notes and say, thank you for showing me that. That was what I needed. And that's the zone I like to be in. You know, I don't like to be presenting anything that I don't think is something my people don't need and would use. That's what I want to help them find.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, that's the difference between people going, cool, but I don't want to hear about this anymore, and thank you for, you know, thank you for asking me for money for this. Thank you for letting me pay you for this.
Yeah, I consider that the sweet spot when you're getting emails like that from people saying, I'm so excited to take this class of this other guy's that you showed me about. Then you're like, you're in the zone where you want to be, where it seems organic and natural to what you present as your free blog material. And it makes sense that it's there, and it's not, it doesn't seem obnoxious. Uh-huh. It's helpful.
Yeah.
You know, the fact is we all are consumers. We buy things that we need, you know, in the course of our lives. So the trick is figuring out what people need that they wouldn't be annoyed by. You know, because if you annoy them, then they're going to go away, and you won't get to sell them anything, you know, so there's always that balance you're striking. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I would assume you're kind of nearing the tipping point there, and that's good because it, for anyone who doesn't know and isn't on Facebook with Jeff so that they can see the pictures of his newborn that he posts almost hourly, he's a new dad, and his baby's so cute. And I'm assuming your wife is home now, you know, on maternity leave at least. Good times. Enjoy every minute of that. So people are asking about how they get the book and the goodies that we have mentioned, because Jeff would like to pay you $158 to buy the book this week. So tell us all the details on that.
Yeah, well, so, you know, first of all, I think it's important to, you know, share the reason behind this. You know, book publishing is funny in the sense that at least with publishing a traditional book, you've got a narrow window of time in which the book can succeed. And if it doesn't succeed, if it doesn't sell a lot of copies in a short amount of time, then you're fighting an uphill battle. Does that mean that you can't, you know, eventually reach a tipping point? No, lots of books just kind of hover, you know, selling a few thousand copies a year, and all of a sudden they become international bestsellers. But, you know, typically, if the book does really well the opening week, then you've got a window of time for it. You know, a bunch of bookstores will order it. And then if it continues to do well for the first month or so, then, you know, you'll keep going. And then if you do well for the first 90 days, consistently for the first 90 days, this is what I've been told, you do consistently well for the first 90 days, you're golden. Like, you will continue, you'll just keep writing it out. If you've hit the bestsellers list, or if you're, you know, selling 10,000 copies a month or whatever is success, you're going to keep writing that out because you've reached a tipping point. So all I'm trying to do is encourage people to not do the thing that most of us do when we see that, you know, a book is for sale, which is I'm going to wait and hear what people say about it. And so my book is retailing for $13.99. Most places you can get it for $10. I have a bunch of products that I'm willing to, you know, give you for free if you, you know, if the book sounds interesting and, you know, you'd like to get it, just because I want to reward people who are going to give me that trust, say, okay, I'm willing to try this out, you know, the first week it comes out. So all that to say, we're giving away six gifts, which include, let's see if I can remember all of them, my best-selling ebook that I released earlier this year, which is about writing, an hour-long audio program that I did, which is like an interview, kind of like this, where I talk about how to build a platform, how to establish your brand as a writer, all the things. It's pretty compact, but it's pretty helpful. Half off of my upcoming online writing course, which is my next big thing. So there's a promo code in that packet. All of the audio versions of the book, Wrecked itself, and then an audiobook, which I just recorded, which will come out really soon. And maybe one other thing. I can't remember if that's six or five.
It's all a blur. And
anyway,
and where do they go to? How do they claim the goodies if they buy it this week? And
sure.
Also, I
should
point out, it is a physical book. Deb said, I don't have a Kindle. How do I get it? It is a physical, three-dimensional book as well.
It's a real book. I think it's beautiful. I was really thrilled with the design of it. It's a paperback book. It's about 160 pages. Pretty quick read.
And Jeff's publisher sent me two copies by accident, so I actually have a copy to give away here. So we'll give that away in a minute here. But, tell us how we claim the goodies if we buy it this week.
Go to wreckedthebook.com, wreckedthebook.com. You'll see, you know, at the bottom of that page, it'll tell you exactly what you get and how to get it. Basically, you just go, you buy the book. I mean, if you don't know where to buy it on Amazon. They say that they're out of stock right now.
I saw that. It's not true. They're lying.
They're lying. Basically what that is that the technical glitch, they sold out of all of their pre-orders, but we sent them a bunch of books on Monday. So they should have them. I just think that it hasn't registered in their system yet.
Gotcha.
So,
I thought that was funny when I saw that they said they were sold out of it.
bottom line, buy the book wherever you can get it. It's easiest to get online. And then just email the receipt to rect@goinswriter.com. All of this is on the page, so you just go there and figure it out. But if you email me the receipt, you will get instant, immediate access to a page with the free ebook. So even if you order the physical copy and it takes a week to get, you can start reading the ebook right now. There's a PDF, there's a Kindle version, a Nook version, a bunch of different ways to look at it. And all of that other stuff, you'll get it immediately. You don't have to wait for it. So you'll actually get all that stuff before you get the book.
Right on.
So
that's
it. That's through Saturday. So you have a couple of days to do that.
Awesomeness. Yeah, it's a great little book for, you know, if you just sort of need a jolt, you need to shake up your paradigm a little and just think about why you do what you do and how you spend your time and whether you're spending it the way you really should. And it's a good little stimulus for that. And we're just about at an hour, so I'm going to wrap it up. And just so great to talk. Jeff and I have exchanged like a million emails over the past, I don't know, 6 months or so. So it's great to finally get to talk to you live.
Yeah.
And present you to the Den members. And Jeff has a pass for the Den. And Jeff, I'll give you a tour of how to get in there after we're off the call. Mm-hmm. And so if you have follow-up questions for Jeff, you can leave him on the questions for Den meetings entry for this event. Thanks for coming, everybody. And thanks, Jeff. And stay on a second, Jeff, okay?
So
we can chat further. Thanks, everybody. We will take more questions in the Den.